Can I ask you what you think about dance?
What I think about dance?
Yeah.
Oof, you have to narrow that down a bit.
Okay.
Where does this question come from?
I guess it comes from the fact that we are both dancers and we're both making dance. But in this medium of radio, we're talking about the ideas that stimulate and then also come from and are stimulated from being engaged physically. I guess I don't really know how to narrow it down more. It's just about how you feel about it, what your relationship is to it.
I love dancing, especially when it happens with other people.
Mm.
And when it happens for a long period of time.
Do you mean
like all night in Berghain or something like this?
Uh-huh.
It's a bit like I like, you know, when you sing and you sing in a choir and you have this feeling that like everyone's in it together.
Mm.
And if you need to like catch your breath or something, the tone is still running because there are like 20 other voices singing with you and like you're a part of this and the detail is not that important if you, you know, miss it.
Being together, it's a way to be together.
Yeah, or it's like a collective thing, and I kind of like that feeling. That's the first thing that comes to my mind now when I think about dancing.
Yeah.
I kind of moved away a little bit, at least recently, from dancing on stage in the conventional sense of the term. But I don't think I dance less than I did some years ago. For that reason, it's just that my focus has been more on other types of actions, and then how I would call those actions, that it didn't seem right to start with dancing. I needed to go a bit more back to basics when I work with names or naming. But yeah, I think a lot of my physical education has been extremely useful and is still very relevant for what I do now, even though that doesn't literally translate so much into my work at the moment.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder about how much I justify my dance education by reframing it as a physical education or a practice of being embodied or a practice of corporal wisdom, that it's almost a superpower to have a comprehensive and educated experience or relationship with the body that you are tied to living in for your whole life.
Mm.
Because it's not actually a common thing.
Mm.
Mm. But I don't know if that is really dance or if that's just the side effect, the benefit of. Yeah.
I think right now for me, it becomes very clear that how I move when I'm with people or in front of people very much reflects where I'm at in my work. Like how I think, like my cognitive processes is reflected in my body language and how I choose to move if someone would say, dance now. Mm. And even if that is not something that I use strategically on stage, I realize that, for instance, recently when I've been using movement material on stage, there's been a lot of high kicks and splits and jumps and split jumps and, you know, like this kind of very virtuoso demonstrative moves.
Yeah.
And I really like it. And there's something very reassuring for me right now about the fact that, yes, I can do a split jump if I want to do, as much as I can, you know, move abstractly, but I don't need to do that. But this kind of demonstrative effort of the body at work when it comes to, you know, the dance side of the spectrum of being on stage, it's been something that I've been kind of relying on the last year or 2 years or something, spontaneously. It doesn't mean that that's the movement language that I consciously would like to use, but I seem to move my body in a very demonstrative way lately. And I think that's kind of interesting in regards to how I work with language that affirms things right now, statements and specific singular words. I think it definitely relates or translates. And then somehow when I go out to dance with people, or when I just when I'm in a bar or something like this, there's less of these kind of movements, because the purpose of that dance is different, and it's dissociated from the rest of my artistic practice. It's not the same, so I would move differently, and I think that's kind of a it's cool to see that difference and to notice that I can dance when I'm working, but I can also dance when I'm not working, and those two expressions are very different and relates to two completely different things and needs.
What is the need of, or the purpose, when you're talking about that dance has a different purpose? What is the purpose of stage dance?
Well, I don't know. In my case, the purpose of using movement on stage is to reveal other sides of that body at work than just standing, sitting, lying and speaking. That could be done in an abstract way, and I think that is useful. Depending on the work you're making. The purpose of the dancing body in a social setting or in a bar or out on town or something like that is being together, not being in front of, merging with that crowd and with those people. So the vocabulary would be different, or how I'm communicating with the surroundings is very different than how I'm communicating with the surroundings being in front of me or something like that.
Yeah,
but that's kind of superficial distinction to make.
It is. But I even remember when I first started trying to break dance, and I still had the idea that I couldn't do it in public without it being a performance. And then I don't know, it occurred to me that actually sometimes the only space that you have to do the thing that you want to do is a public space. And so just because there are people there does not inherently make it a performance. And that you can, and I think that's something about being, dancing in with other people rather than to be watched, is that it's a very blurry line. And sometimes it's not even your choice. It's not the performer's choice. It's the audience's choice, whether they're going to be a viewer, whether they're going to be a partaker, and whether they think you're doing something to show off, or that you're doing something for your own joy, or that you can't afford to hire a studio and that's why you're working on your choreography in the park, for example. And do you think that when we're talking about demonstrative virtuosity, do you think that that would have a completely different aesthetic if you'd had different training? Like, do you sometimes just wonder if, okay, now I am demonstrating virtuosity, but if I had been trained in aerial maneuvers, or if I'd been trained in kung fu or whatever, then I would be doing roundhouse kicks or...
Yes, of course.
And does that ever feel like a restriction? Like, would you feel that you were being more virtuous if you did a backflip than if you did a split kick?
Well, It's relative to who you're doing it for and what context you're doing it in. What is virtuosic for me is not necessarily that for a certain type of audience, or maybe it is. That being said, when I do a split jump or when I do a high kick or those kind of demonstrative movements that I was using as examples before, it doesn't mean that I'm doing it good, huh?
It's like a reference to virtuosity.
Yeah, or
it's like I'm doing it well enough for you to know what it is.
Or I'm just, you know, doing it with the full heart or like wholeheartedly. Whether, you know, what I'm demonstrating is not so much this or that move, but I think what is interesting for me in this kind of demonstrative movement is more the effort that you put into such an act. It's just incredibly fascinating to watch a body that just goes all the fucking way, you know. It's kind of it's like lifting up this enthusiasm, you know. Like it's like lifting up a milk carton that you think is full and is empty, and you just like feel like Superman because you lift it so much and you don't need to, you know, but you just go there. And I think that's marvelous, and I love that expressivity in whatever form or whatever, if it, that being a virtuoso movement or not, or just like full on street dancing in the bar, you know. But this kind of making that effort, it's I think it's fantastic. I think watching an enthusiastic body working at something, it's just pleasurable, and both to do and to watch. And I think if that's the starting point, yeah, I don't mind if you do it good or bad, or if there's a split, or if there's just a sidekick or whatever.
I love that idea of the enthusiastic body.
Yeah.
Being pleasurable.
It's, of course, also incredibly exhausting, huh? To after a.
Yeah.
To watch, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't always want that. Full on enthusiasm in everything you do, but for me, when we speak about dance and movement,
yeah,
I think there's something pretty awesome about that.
Yeah, there is a fatigue, isn't there, even from the viewer, that they're not even doing the moves, but they can only gain the same amount of pleasure or be empathetic to the experience for so long. And then at some point, it just doesn't mean anything anymore.
Perhaps I haven't really reached that limit because I just do one move at a time.
You know, before how we were talking about the fear that making a decision and then moving towards it closes down your options, but actually it's generating more options. I wonder if setting a choreography or a show so that it is something that is finite and can be repeated over a season, I wonder if that is somehow the opposite of that, where we call it creation, we call it like we're creating a piece, but what we're actually doing is locking off options that are available to us during rehearsal until we get to a set taxidermied product that can be repeated. I wonder how you, I mean, I don't know if you do, I wonder if you keep it alive by letting yourself have more options, or if it's that, no, you know the options are set for the performance, but you keep it alive by your relationship to having to execute the things.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think I resist a bit to this expression, keeping it alive, as if performing, the main objective of performance is to make alive or make real something that's actually fake or still. I don't think it's like that. So I never think really about it like that when I perform, like, what are my strategies to keep this set choreography alive? Because actually it's dead the moment I set it. Then secondly,
Do you think it is dead the moment that you set it, or no?
No. I mean, structure is everywhere, and I think, yeah, I think it's can be very useful, depending on what you do. But then also I think that there is a, you should, often I feel like I meet a kind of a misconception of what process-oriented works are, or kind of to be in a process is the process finishes when the performance has been created, whereas I don't think it's like that, or I think it's a pity if we exclude that last part of the real process as and treat it as a part of the process, that being set or not. I don't think it's a contradiction. And sometimes, or quite often, we define a research process as something that ends when we start performing that research. And what if that research could have a form, or a readable form even, God forbid? Why does it stop being research? Or why do we stop relating to it as artists, I would say? Stop relating to it as research. I wonder if it's possible to turn it around like that, instead of saying, now it's fixed, I have to find new strategies to keep it alive. It's possible to research performance while performing a performance, I think.
Now it's your turn being poetic. That's such a nice idea, that it's possible to research performance while performing performance.
I just often think like, ah, damn it, it's a pity if we limit our idea of process to something that stops when we start performing.
Yes.
And that the result of the research is necessarily an abstract or unreadable form in order for that to identify with the research process. You know what I mean?
No, say that again. The result.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if that's... Sometimes if we go through... how to say this? If we decide that the result of a research process is necessarily an not set choreography or an abstract experience...
Yes.
We also limit our possibilities of what that research could be if it's trapped in an aesthetic of research, instead of taking seriously how to communicate that research. That could be as well a readable form, as just as much as an abstract experience, or nothing is an abstract experience, but an abstract structure, let's say, more abstract structure.
And what is the aesthetic of research? Or how do you steer clear of keeping yourself, like being trapping yourself in the aesthetic of research?
Maybe trying to be clear instead of vague, or daring to make statements instead of asking questions at all stages in the process, I think. And then you could always change them. But yeah, this kind of overkill of questions sometimes makes it difficult to understand where we want to go or something.
Yeah, that maybe it's not actually beneficial to try everything and to question everything. Maybe sometimes if you feel like you know, then be thankful that you're having that feeling and just continue that way.
Or just decide that you assume you know certain things even though you're not sure, and say, if we say that things are like this, and then instead of saying, I don't know and everything is possible, and say, right now only this is possible, and what happens if this is only this is possible?
So instead of everything is possible, it's let us work from the basis that this is like this. And then what is possible from that?
For instance.
Yeah. How are you going? With the length? It's all right?
With the what?
with how long we've been discussing?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Okay. I was going to go to a performance now starting in half an hour, so I guess maybe I have to slowly
move. Get ready? Okay, well, how about one last question? Is that all right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I want to ask you, what is your biggest hope?
That's a hard one to finish off with.
Yeah.
I hope that, I assume we're still speaking about me in relation to my work and where I want to go with it. Or
if you'd like, we can talk about anything, I guess.
Well, right now I basically hope that I will be able to do what I do now for longer. I don't know, Matt. I don't know. You cannot just throw this kind of question at me and expect me to say something beautiful to finish up with. Terrible.
Well, no, it's all right. We can edit all this out, but maybe it's easier if I make it more specific. Like, what is your biggest hope for dance or for dance practice or for movement or for people coming together or for now that you live somewhere, now that you've chosen an apartment, what is your biggest hope? Or what is your biggest hope for the show that you're about to go and see? It doesn't. And I mean, if you have nothing else to say, then I just cut all this out and we finished 10 minutes ago. That's easy as well. But like one designer that I spoke to, he said that his biggest hope is that somebody who's a genius at design redesigns the technology that is our global trading system, because he thinks if that can be fixed, then a lot of the other problems of inequality can be redistributed. And that somehow it's just the system has been ill-conceived. I mean, one of my biggest hopes is that I can do something with the life and the privilege that I've been given that brings about usefulness and benefit and joy to other good people. I mean, it's not... Huh?
Those are good hopes.
I mean, it's not very tangible. I don't know how I'm working towards it, but that's one of my hopes. My other hope is that I can get to the thing that I care about, and I can get there by doing only the things that I currently care about and not have to go through the pain to get to the promised land or something. I don't know.
I just hope that when I get to Slovenia on Monday to do the show on Thursday, that the Dia projector that we're gonna borrow there works.
Great. That's a great hope.
Because I've spent so much time finding this slide projector. I've seen a picture of it and it's the right one, but I will not know until I get there if it actually functions with our slides.
And then as soon as that is quelled and satisfied and put to rest, then you'll have another hope. Be like, I hope that people come to the show, or...
Sure, you know, all of that, and that life goes on, and that we'll figure out new stuff in what we do, and that we will keep communicating about that in dynamic conversation instead of, you know, stubborn opinions and all that kind of things. But for now, it's just the Dia projector that needs to work on Thursday night at 8 o'clock.
Excellent. All right, well, thanks.
Thanks, Matt.